Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today. No matter when you are choosing to listen to this show, you of course can listen to us live right here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 every Saturday at 4 p.m. But we are also available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So you can listen to the show whenever you'd like, wherever you'd like, however you'd like. Just make sure that you do listen, because we always want to make your day better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. With me, as always, is Jeremy Branch, my co-host. Jeremy, welcome.
Hey, buddy. Glad to be here.
Party on, Jeremy.
Just so that the folks at home are aware, as Pensacon ramps up, our ability to consume content goes down a little bit, but we have a lot of topics that we're going to touch on today. And looking forward to it.
Yeah, and on that point, want to apologize about the unexpected rerun last week. That's exactly what happened, frankly. As many of you know, I am part of the executive team on Pensacon, and right now that's kind of got to be the biggest priority as we are, gosh, what is it, 3 weeks away, 3.5 weeks away?
Something yeah, it's
like
that. Getting close.
So yeah, it is taking up a significant amount of my time right now. We will try to have no further interruptions as we approach Pensacon, but no promises there. But yeah, it does mean that, as Jeremy said, that my time in particular is, and Jeremy's as well, but mine in particular is a little limited these days. So there's a lot of stuff that I think you would have thought that we'd be talking about on the show that we just haven't gotten a chance to get to yet, either both of us or myself. And I think kind of prime among those two things is two shows that have started up fairly recently, one of which is actually almost done with its season at this point, which is Fallout on Amazon Prime. I think anybody who listens to the show regularly knows that we were both big fans of the first season. And I've been very much looking forward to the new season, but I haven't had 5 minutes to sit and watch any of it. And,
yeah, I'm sure that'll be something that you're catching up on as you get a little bit more time on your schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of driving me a little bit crazy because I'm having to avoid spoilers.
How's that going?
Okay. Nobody's hit me with anything yet. Somebody will at some point, and then I will want to hit them. I won't, because that's not who I am, but I'll want to.
Hopefully
it won't come to that, but I think we're coming up on the season finale maybe next week. Does that sound right?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Next I didn't realize it was that close to
next week
end.
Or the week after. I don't want to Google it because I'm afraid I'll spoil something, but I know we're like 6 or 7 episodes in, and I think it's only an 8 episode season. So
there is something that we're only a couple of episodes in, and I'd be remiss not to mention that the new song, A Song of Ice and Fire series, has just now hit HBO Max. Julio hadn't had a chance to check it out yet, so we're not going to delve into it. But I did want to mention to you, Julio, that the audience reception to it in particular has been much lower than typical. As I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes, Game of Thrones, the original series, has an 85% audience score. House of the Dragon has a 77% audience score. And A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is all the way down at a 65. And I found that to be almost newsworthy. So I was wondering if you had, had heard anything about that or have thoughts on it.
I've heard a little, and I do have some thoughts. First of all, I think Rotten Tomatoes audience score is completely useless for the most part, because it's so subject to review bombing.
Yeah.
That, it's fine if, there's nobody with an agenda involved, but how much is there how much is there out there anymore that doesn't have somebody with an agenda involved in it?
Yeah, it's a good point. Nothing necessarily in this series that I would point to say this is the hot button about it. I think a bit of it just comes from the fact that it lacks this scale or scope or the grandiosity of these movies or these series that are kind of about royal houses, where this is more like a everyman look at Westeros. And I just love the world so much that I'm enjoying it a lot.
But my understanding of it was that that was always the point.
Yeah. You know,
that this was if you've read these, I guess it's a series of novellas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I've actually read the first two. There's one I hadn't got to yet.
So if you've read these novellas, they are meant to be smaller stories that take place in this bigger world. So it makes sense that the series itself would also be a smaller thing. You know, it's not, you know, this grand epic backdrop. It is, you know, telling the tale of some of the smaller characters within that world, and within the scope of their part of that world. So, you know, I don't know why people didn't expect that, other than people just don't pay attention to what they're talking about.
Yeah, there's a bit of that for sure.
You know, it's something we've talked about on the show before. People don't pay attention to any news about things, and or they don't really pay attention to the show itself because they're playing Candy Crush at the same time, or, you know, or making a TikTok, or, you know, buying stuff on Whatnot, or, you know, sending pictures that they shouldn't be sending, or, you know, you know, who knows?
People looking forward to it.
I am, you know, I have been a big fan of this world, and I have been looking forward to the show. It's just a matter of me finding the time to watch it. Once we get through Pensacon, I'll definitely have some binging in my future. Fallout and Night of the Seven Kingdoms being high on that list, but there's some other stuff as well. And, I'll get to it as I can get to it, basically.
That's right.
Now, what I have had a little bit of time to watch is a couple of trailers that have dropped in the last couple of weeks that I wanted to at least give a little mention to.
Sure.
One thing is we got a little, not really even a trailer, kind of, I would call it a sizzle reel, might be the best way to put it. But we got a little extended glimpse at Jason Momoa as Lobo in the upcoming Supergirl movie that's coming out in June.
I don't know this character like you do, but from what I understand, you think they nailed it with this.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do. So, we got just a very short glimpse of him in the teaser trailer that came out. Oh, I guess it was maybe a month or so ago at this point. But there's a little video that's come out that's just a behind the scenes of Momoa being asked how he's feeling about playing Lobo, and he cracks a little joke to the camera. And then we see, 15-20 seconds of him in action as Lobo. And it is just, it's like the character walked off the page of the comics and into the movie. Momoa.
Are you talking Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool, kind of on that same scale?
Is probably as good a match of actor and actor.
Awesome. Yeah,
at least in the little bit that we're seeing. The little bit that we're seeing is enough to tell me that Momoa is just absolutely nailing this character.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, this character is an intergalactic bounty hunter. He's an anti-hero at best. He's borderline a villain. And he has a really bad attitude. He's like a Hell's Angel on steroids from outer space.
I think DC created him as a Wolverine parody, if I'm not mistaken.
He was meant to be something of a parody originally of not just Wolverine, but a lot of those kind of bad-attitude anti-hero characters.
Sure.
And took on a life of his own and grew beyond being a parody into being his own character. You know, for better or for worse in some ways, to be completely honest. There's some hint that it wasn't what the creator of the character intended, but on the other hand, the creators of that character, who were unfortunately both no longer with us, Keith Giffen and Robert Lauren Fleming, really, and I said that I'm not 100% sure about Robert Lauren Fleming. I'm pretty sure, but definitely Keith Giffen. They certainly continued to work on the development of that character after he took off. So while it may not have been what they initially intended, they still continued to develop the character in the direction that the fans seemed to like.
Cool.
So, I got to imagine Keith Giffen passed fairly recently. I got to imagine he's looking at, from wherever he is now, if he can see Jason Momoa as Lobo, he's pretty happy with that. We got to take a break.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Enoch said, hey, 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 hey. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. Jeremy, what's going on?
That was fun. I've never heard that remix. I enjoyed that.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, it's the first time.
Are you absolutely 100% serious with me right now?
Oh, dude, I would not lie to you about this.
Oh, my God. So first of all, that remix just makes me laugh my ass off.
It's silly.
No matter what, because it's just ridiculous. It was ridiculous when it came out, when that song was a hit. But I assumed you knew why I was playing that. And the fact that you don't know what's going on with what's going on, my mind is blown. Have you not seen the animated videos on the YouTubes and the TikToks of the Masters of the Universe characters singing this version of this song?
Oh, yes, I have. It's been a while, but that makes perfect sense now that you say it. That was a good little viral video that went around years ago.
Oh, dude, if they don't put this version of this song in this Masters of the Universe movie, as far as I'm concerned, it's failed. It can be over the end credits. It doesn't have to be in the action or anything like that. They got to throw that in there.
Wait a second. There's a Masters of the Universe movie coming out?
There is indeed. After it seems like a couple of decades of them trying to get a Masters of the Universe film off the grounds. At the very least, we have a trailer. So, who knows what could still happen, but they have shot a Masters of the Universe film and gotten it close enough to done that a trailer dropped this week.
So, well, that's a promising sign.
Yeah. Now, I got to admit, I am not the biggest Masters of the Universe fan in the world. I have a superficial familiarity with the property. I've certainly seen some episodes of the animated series when I was younger. I did like the Kevin Smith animated series on Netflix.
Yeah,
thought that was pretty enjoyable. I have seen the original live-action movie from the 80s that is...
I don't remember that happening.
It's very bad. Let's just put it that way. It
is a sequel at the end that never happens.
It is very much not good.
It's fun though. Courtney Cox and Dolph Lundgren are in it.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say there is, having seen some of the props up close, like the there was no effort skimped on the production design or anything like that. The production design is pretty cool, but they should have put some of that effort into a script. That might have been an idea.
That's a novel idea.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, we have a Masters of the Universe film slated to come out June 5th, so we're only a couple of months away from that at this point. We're almost to February, so basically 4 months. So this is happening, guys. And I thought the trailer was pretty good. I thought the trailer was pretty good.
Yeah. So I, similar to you, I was so young when the show came out that I certainly watched episodes of it. I have early memories of, seeing that and Thundercats, which were similar era. But my biggest familiarity with both of those properties is the action figures and the entire lineup of He-Man action figures were fantastic at the time.
That's really where it starts.
Really good on them. They were greatly articulated. They were cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's really where it starts. The animated series was made in support of the toys, not the other way around. The toys came first. The toys are where the mythology starts.
Interesting.
And they had the little mini comics that came with the toys. That's absolutely where this world starts. So I think if you're going to make a successful Masters of the Universe movie, you have to not only look at the animated series, you've got to look at the toys, and you have to make all of those things happen. And
they've got a great looking Beast Man in the trailer.
Beast Man looked incredible, like better than he ever has in anything else, other than maybe the original toy itself. I thought all of the characters looked really good, including, and I recognize that there's some debate about this. I think I'm dubious about the actor that's playing him, and I notice they don't give him any actual lines in the trailer. But I think Skeletor looked great.
Yeah, I don't have any issues with it other than maybe the casting, but I've never been like strongly opposed to Jared Leto as an actor. However, he does seem to be kryptonite for franchises.
In the past, I have defended Jared Leto as a good actor and a terrible human being. I have started to back away from the good actor stuff.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah,
like, I mean, these films are at least partly his fault. These bad films.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all bad script and bad directing and et cetera. You know, that may be part of it, but he's not given a great performance, you know, in anything since.
It's almost as if they're paycheck movies, because as we've talked about before, he's fantastic in Dallas Buyers Club. He's excellent in a small role in Blade Runner 2049. Requiem for a Dream, we've seen him do good work before, but he doesn't seem to be in it in the way that he used to. And maybe that's for the better, considering all of his weird method stuff.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but the cast otherwise is pretty great. I mean, Alison Brie playing Evil Lyn, sign me up.
Awesome.
I never like Alison Brie more than when she's playing Evil and kind of, what's the best way I can put it? Rhymes with witchy. Let's put it that way. I like that. Let's just put it that way. We'll leave it at that.
She's one of my favorites. Yeah. What about this guy that's playing He-Man?
I haven't seen too much with him. Nicholas Galitzine, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's been in a few other movies. He was in that sequel or reboot of The Craft a few years back.
Okay.
A few other things. That's right. He was in Bottoms. I forgot that he was in Bottoms.
I didn't realize that either, but now I know who he is because of that.
But, you know, certainly looks the part, seems to be having fun with it in the trailer. Certainly is buff enough, which is certainly a consideration for He-Man. He-Man's got to be buff.
I saw a video of a guy basically saying that he thought they should have done CGI to make him look bigger. I'm like, what's the point? He looks great as it is.
No, you don't want to make him look ridiculous. He is exactly the right.
No, they don't want to go Moana.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But Camila Mendes playing Tila, Marina Baccarin as the sorceress. Yeah, it's a great cast for this. Idris Elba's also in it in some kind of undisclosed role.
He's playing Oracle.
Yeah, so...
No, I'm just kidding, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell me that he was playing Orko and I'd buy it. I guess he's Man-at-Arms. I'm sorry, he's not an undisclosed role at all. He's Man-at-Arms.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm assuming somebody's going to have a problem with that because it's changing the race of the character, but you know.
Yeah. That's important.
Considering apparently there are people that have a problem with the pronoun joke in the trailer, which is just stupid. It's clearly a joke. It's meant to be a He-Man joke. It is a He-Man movie. So he, him pronouns is meant to be a He-Man joke. Not a wokeism is taking over the world thing. Get over it. Get a sense of humor.
It's kind of funny that they would say that right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, so I think the trailer looks fun. I've heard mixed reactions to it on the internet, but you know what? The internet would have mixed reactions to a bowl of soup.
So there's a lot of people on the internet.
Yeah. So, you know, that's all well and good. But we're getting close to a couple other things that I think we're excited about. Just saw a little teaser for Invincible Season 4, which is sooner than I think anybody thought it was going to be, and that it's going to be in March.
Yeah, so it feels like they put those out so fast compared to TV shows where it takes like 4 years in between seasons, it seems like.
Well, remember we had that huge gap between Seasons 1 and 2.
That's right.
Yeah, so, and in fact, they continue to make jokes about that in these teaser trailers. But you got just a little teaser of Mark and Adam Eve sitting together talking about, you know, the season's getting ready to come. And it's a fun little teaser. It doesn't really show any action or anything like that. But that's okay, because all you need to know is Invincible is coming back in March.
And there's going to be some action.
There will be a lot of action.
Mm-hmm.
Have no doubt of that whatsoever. And then we also are coming up before too much longer on the next season of The Boys, the final season of The Boys, although we're going to see more in The Boys universe after that. But the final season of The Boys proper coming at the beginning of April. So
yeah, I'm eager to see how they wrap this whole thing up. As I've said on record a lot of times, I think Homelander is one of the greatest villains on television. I really love the entire cast, and I'm eager to see where they go with this next season.
Yeah, now we know that there's going to be a prequel series that's going to come after that's called Vought Rising that's going to focus on Soldier Boy and Stormfront. So we'll see Jensen Ackles back. Yeah, it's going to you know take place prior to all of this. And in fact, one of the actors that we just announced for Pensacon, Mark Pellegrino, is going to be in that as well.
Awesome.
So we're very excited about that. But yeah, and then we've also got, and just very quickly, there's also a Darth Maul animated series that's getting ready to debut on April 2nd. There's a lot of excitement about that as well.
Looks good.
Yeah, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I was a ghost, I was alone, given the throne, I didn't know how to believe I was the queen that I'm meant to be. I lived two lives, tried to play both sides, but I couldn't find my own place. Caught a problem child, could have got too wild, but now that's how I'm getting paid. Could I see on stage? I'm done hiding, now I'm shining like I'm gonna be. We dreaming hard, we came so far, now I believe. We're going up, 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 it's our moment. You know together we're glowing, gonna be golden. Up, up, up with our voices, you wanna get just so on it. Gonna be golden. Oh, I'm done hiding, now I'm shining like a butterfly. Oh, our time, no fears, no lies, that's who we're gonna be. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got my co-host, Jeremy Branch, on the line. And
what did you think about that song, Julio? I know that's the first time you've heard it.
It, you know, which is surprising because it is one of the biggest songs of the past 6 months. It's still a top three hit right now, if I'm not mistaken, on the Billboard chart. That is Golden by Huntrix from K-Pop Demon Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fine pop song.
I know you and I don't always see eye to eye on pop music. There's some stuff that you like that I don't love, and I think there's some stuff that I love that you don't particularly care for.
Uh-huh.
That song emotionally moves me. Like, I just think it is so beautiful when she hits that high register in it, like right before the end of the chorus. Really, really good song.
Now,
well produced.
Let me ask you this. And the reason, let me make clear before we get into this.
Sure.
The reason we're playing this song is it was just nominated for an Academy Award last week. Academy Award nominations just came out. Since we weren't on last week, we wanted to spend some time talking about them this week. But so that is one of the nominees for Best Original Song this year. Do you think that the emotion you feel in this song is based on its use in the movie and you connecting it with that? Or is it just based on the song itself?
Maybe. It's hard to be objective about it. And then I guess the other big question to answer that, I'm not sure. Maybe. But then the other one that I also have a deeper connection to that's a nominated song is going to be I Lied to You.
Which I'm going to play when we go into the next segment. If you haven't heard that one,
that's
from Sinners. For me, that would be my personal pick, but I will be frank with you. I don't think I've heard any of the other nominated songs other than what I just heard of Golden by Huntrix. It's a fine pop song. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's going to kill when they do it live on the show.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a massive hit. It's going to get people to tune into the Oscars, which is great because there's not going to be that much longer where you can say tune into the Oscars because in a couple of years it's moving to YouTube.
It's
which
so
is
interesting.
Just weird, but you know, that's a whole other story. You know, I think, you know, it's certainly not a surprise that it was nominated. It's one of the biggest films of the year. I wasn't a surprise that it got a Best Animated Feature nomination either. I, you know, it's To me, you have
your finger on the pulse of this stuff. Would you say that there is a front runner in this topic?
In original song?
Yeah.
My guess is it's probably down to the two that we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Because the other three, you got Diane Warren nominated for like the 19th time and has never won. So that is, and it's for a song from a documentary about her.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have like two documentary songs in the category this year. I actually read a piece this week that was arguing to do away with the best original song category. I don't agree with that.
No.
But I do think, you know, there was other stuff out there that it would have been nice to see considered that was from maybe slightly less obscure stuff and slightly less obscure artists. And not that artistic merit should be decided by popularity.
Right.
But, you know, tell me that you've heard the Diane Warren song.
No, I haven't.
It's called Dear Me. Tell me that can you tell me the name of the nominated song from the movie Viva Verde? I
haven't even heard of the movie.
Again, documentary called song called Sweet Dreams of Joy. And then the last song, the title song from the movie Train Dreams, which is on Netflix, is another movie that's nominated for several awards this year. Can't argue with the pedigree here, man. It's Nick Cave.
Oh, no, yeah, you cannot.
Nick Cave wrote the lyrics and co-wrote the music. You know, Nick Cave's an all-time great. But do I know the song? No.
Yeah, I would hate doing away with that category. I don't know how you feel about that specifically, and I know we don't want to spend the whole segment talking about music, but I know both you and I are passionate about it, and I would hate to see that go.
I will say,
even to the broader point, it's a draw. It's almost like the halftime show at Super Bowl.
Yeah, I will say, in general, I am against removing any categories.
Yeah.
I understand that there is an attitude amongst some people that nobody cares about the Craft Awards. Nobody cares about the Below the Line Awards. That's not true. It means a lot to those people. It means a lot to their careers. You know, if they can put on their resume that they have an Oscar for best makeup and hairstyling, then every film that needs makeup and hairstyling is going to want to hire them.
Yep, that's right.
You know, these are Guild Awards and industry awards first and foremost. And above and beyond that, you know, like, it takes all of these creative people to make a movie. And there are, in fact, other parts of movie making that are not currently awarded that I would like to see awarded. And we're addressing that this year. We're getting an award for best casting this year.
Good.
Which is great. And within the next year or two, we get the award added for the best stunt coordination, which is long, long, long overdue. So, you know, glad to see that. I think there's probably a couple other categories that should be considered. The story that I read that was suggesting eliminating the best original song category did suggest replacing it with best music supervision. So that would be the person responsible for bringing all the music to a film, whether it's original or sourced, and kind of, you know, that's responsible for finding the right music to go with the song, whether it be original songs or pre-existing songs. And if you think
about the casting award, I've got some questions about that, but I guess we can wait to delve into it.
Yeah, well, we can get into that in just a second. But I mean, like, if you think about how important pre-done music has been over the years, when you're talking about the works of James Gunn or Quentin Tarantino or Martin Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola, you know, number of great directors that have made such great use of pre-existing music that it's become something of a trademark for them.
Yeah.
You know, there should be some kind of award for that. And
yeah,
whether I would say you get rid of best original song to replace that or not, I think there's a place for it. And, you know, in some cases that happens to be the director picks those songs. And in some cases, they work with a music supervisor who brings those songs to them. And the director says, yes, I want this, this, this. And maybe you split the award that way. I don't know. But there is a job in Hollywood called music supervisor. It is a very vital job, and it should be recognized. Now, getting to what you're saying about the best casting. So it happens to be that they've given that the nominations in the first inaugural stab at this to films that aren't also nominated for Best Picture, which makes some sense. You have the casting directors are the nominees. You have Nina Gold for Hamnet, Jennifer Vendetti for Marty Supreme, Cassandra Kulukundis for One Battle After Another, Gabriel Dominguez for The Secret Agent, and Francine Mazler for Sinners. Now, to me, this is kind of, in some ways, equivalent to the award that SAG gives instead of a Best Actor, a Best Picture award. They give a Best Cast award, like for the overall, like that's their equivalent for a Best Picture.
Right.
This is kind of the same thing, but I think where the potential is that you can recognize that this movie has been cast extremely well and they've put the right actors in the right roles across the board, not just in the lead and supporting roles, but casting goes to every person with a speaking line in the movie. So there are a lot of movies where, you know, there might be actors in small roles that are very memorable that don't otherwise get recognized. And that's where this would come into play. That can theoretically be a movie that is not necessarily a Best Picture nomination.
You would think.
You know, I mean, I can think of a number of films over the past few years that did not earn Best Picture nominations, and whether I think they should have earned Best Picture nominations or not is another story, but that I think would have been perfectly logical nominees for this category. And I hate to keep going back to the James Gunn well, but you got to look at Guardians of the Galaxy as a primary example of that. You got to look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general. The casting overall has just been incredible. And, you know, they have found the right actors to match with the right characters pretty much across the board. And, you know, whether you think those films should be nominated for Best Picture or not, I think the casting job that these casting directors have done is absolutely incredible. It's going to be interesting to see as time goes by what happens with this category. I think that it kind of took the easy route this year in nominating a bunch of Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, and I'm just like wondering, is it quantity over quality? Like you said, I think you addressed it, and that is that it's like you could have one really good performance in a movie, and that doesn't mean that the casting holistically is the best, but it's interesting to see that it is all of the same Best Picture nominations.
Well, we are going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about some of the major categories in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Something I've been wanting to tell you for a long time. It might hurt you. Hope you don't lose your mind. Well, I was just a boy, about 8 years old. You threw me a Bible on that Mississippi road. See, I love you, Papa. You did all you could do. And they say the truth hurts, so I lied to you. Yes, I lied to you. I love the blues.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, my co-host, and we are talking about the Academy Award nominations, and we said we would play I Lied to You, which we think is the other probable contender for the Best Original Song Oscar. So Jeremy, hearing him back-to-back like that, does that influence you any?
I mean, if anything, I'm a little bit embarrassed because having seen Sinners and having seen K-Pop Demon Hunters, I Lied to You is a much more thematically, I don't even want to say that. It has more depth to me. It honors the history of music as well as the Black contribution to music. Music would not exist in its current form had it not been for like the Mississippi Delta Blues. And I won't go down the list of just most influential artists, but like that song should hit for me more, and maybe it does, but it's hard to say without having seen the movie.
That's fair. That's fair. So what if we say we give best original song to I Lied to You, but give best animated feature to K-Pop Demon Hunters? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like K-Pop Demon Hunters, there's an argument to be made that it was the most culturally, moved the needle for the most people. But I think it's going to be one of the more obscure animated movies that wins that award. It just kind of raises an interesting question to me, and that is what makes a best song? Is it a song that people listen to on repeat or add to their playlist and listen to more, or is it one that means more to the movie and to the story?
Well, I mean, that's the up to the individual voter to decide.
Yeah. To you, what do you think?
I think that to me, in the context of it being an Academy Award for Best Original Song, that it matters how it is married to the film.
Yeah, I respect that. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, this is ultimately a film award. So, you know, I would say it matters how it's married to the film. And I think that that's part of the, if you think of the criteria that they have for these awards, they actually changed the criteria a while back that the song to be nominated in the for the Oscar has to be featured in the body of the film or to be the first song that plays as the credits roll.
But it can't be the final credit.
It cannot
song.
Be the final credit song. So it can't be, you know, sometimes you have these songs, these movies with credits long enough that there's two or three or four songs in them.
Uh-huh.
Only the first one is eligible.
Interesting.
Yeah. So in that regard, I think that the intention is for it to be the song married with the film.
Yeah.
Has that always been how it's been awarded?
I Lied to You has got a good shot.
Now, has that always been how it's been awarded? No, not remotely.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing you have to consider is the fact that Sinners is up for a record number of Oscars this year. They set a new record with 16 nominations.
Man.
It's going to win some stuff.
Yes.
And I think that the music categories, being that this is a movie that is so intrinsically involved with music, are kind of a lock for Sinners. I don't see Sinners losing best original song or best score. My thinking is it's going to take both. It's got some strong competition for score. You know, you're looking at Johnny Greenwood for One Battle After Another. You're looking at
awesome.
Andre Duplat for Frankenstein. You know, some strong scores in there. And I would like to see Johnny Greenwood get one of these eventually because I think he's earned it. But I don't think this is the year. I think this is Ludwig Göransson's year. And Ludwig Göransson also co-wrote I Lied to You, as well as writing the score. He co-wrote that with Raphael Sadiq.
He's done all of Kugler's music.
Yes, yeah. And I think did he win for Black Panther?
Maybe he did.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that. I'll have to double check. But, you know, he is a regular Kugler collaborator. A lot of regular Kugler collaborators, try saying that five times fast, recognizing this. Of course, Michael B. Jordan getting a Best Actor nomination. Kugler himself is nominated for as the producer and as the director and as the screenwriter. Original screenplay, which I think...
I love to see this as a success story because it's often cited that the Oscars has overlooked horror films, but I feel the last couple of years they have gone against the grain and given genre fans something to be excited about, including another of both of our favorites last year, which was The Substance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, not just that, but Amy Madigan getting a Best Supporting Actress nominee for Weapons as well.
Yep.
So, you know, there is, and you know, for that matter, you know, the granddaddy of them all, Frankenstein.
Yeah, good point.
With Guillermo del Toro's film getting several nominations, although Guillermo himself not getting nominated for Best Director was kind of weird. That's the thing that happened. He did get the DGA nomination, but he did not get the Oscar nomination. I think he was, the slot that he had. I think otherwise the DGA nominations are all the same as the Oscars, except I think the Oscars gave it to Joaquin Trier for Sentimental Value. I think he was the one that did not get nominated at the DGA, if I'm recalling correctly.
Interesting.
I think that the overall that has been like kind of the cast for award season in general, and for the Oscars in particular, is the story seems to be sinners versus one battle after another.
Yeah.
Which, if you're Warner Brothers, you gotta love, because
good news for them.
Yeah, they're both Warner Brothers films, so either way, they're going to be very happy at the Vanity Fair party on the night of the Oscars, if that proves to be true, if these two films don't cancel each other out. But one battle after another.
I want to know what your personal preference is. Are you camp Sinners, or you camp One Battle After Another?
Well, let me just say, One Battle After Another, 13 nominations, which is pretty close to what the record had been before Sinners just broke it this year. So plenty of nominations as well, and has certainly been racking up wins at various guilds and things like that. And it's interesting because in terms of, like, if you're asking me to pick my favorite of the two, for me personally, it's Sinners.
Okay.
For me personally, Sinners is the best film of the year that I've seen. I have not seen all of these films, in complete fairness. So looking at the Best Picture nominees, I have seen Begonia, I have seen Hamnet, I've seen One Battle After Another, and I have seen Sinners. So I have seen 4 out of 10. I have not seen F1, Frankenstein, Marty Supreme, The Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, or Train Dreams. As of yet, I will see them before the Oscars come out.
Yeah, there's a couple of those I haven't seen as well.
So with that, my because I'm not as big on Begonia or Hamnet as a lot of people are, I think they're both very well-made movies. There are things I like about both of them. Neither one of them is in my top 10 for the year. It does really come down to Sinners versus One Battle After Another for me. And for me, Sinners as a film just edges out One Battle After Another. That being said, if One Battle After Another has a great night, that is not going to break my heart. I think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I have no issue with anybody involved with that movie cleaning up. Where now, when we get into the prognostication side of this, though, I have two minds. So putting aside my own personal feelings, and before I do that, Jeremy, what's your personal feeling? Where do you lean on?
So I actually would argue that One Battle After Another is a better film, beginning to end. I think there's just some really incredible stuff in it from a filmmaking perspective. And that's not to take away anything Ryan Coogler did with it. I might prefer Sinners as just a kind of more personal pick of something that I would probably put on and watch more often.
Okay, so from a prognostication standpoint, to bring it back to that, I have maybe changed my mind a little bit since the nominations came out. After the nominations came out last week, and there were two things that kind of gave me an indicator that maybe One Battle After Another is peaking too soon and Sinners is coming back around. One is the fact that Sinners got the record-breaking amount of nominations. But the other is that the emotional core of One Battle After Another is the performance by Chase Infinity, the lead actress in this film. Everybody said she's a lock to get nominated. She did not get nominated. She's the only major actor in the film that did not get nominated.
She's so good.
So Leonardo DiCaprio got nominated. Benicio Del Toro and Sean Penn both got nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Tiana Taylor got nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Chase Infinity did not get a Best Actress nomination. So those two things made me feel like, well, maybe One Battle After Another is peaked and Sinners is on the rise. But, and I don't want to get too political here, but world events over the past week since the Oscar nominations have come out have made One Battle After Another even more relevant than it ever was before.
Understood.
And that could sway a lot of votes. So,
yeah, I think that's a great observation, and that would not surprise me if that was factored in heavily.
Yeah, I think it's a roll of the dice, and I think it's going to depend on what happens in the world around us over the next few weeks and months. To see where this goes. I think both of the movies are incredibly relevant, but man, One Battle After Another, it almost looks prescient.
Yeah, point taken.
You know, and like I said, I'm not going to say anything more than that. You know, I'm not going to change anybody's minds on politics here. It's not worth getting into it. This is not a political show, but this is a political film, and it's a political award season. So you can't avoid mentioning it, but we're not going to go into detail about it. If I had to say today, I'd say one battle after another. Ask me again in 3 weeks.
Sure.
But we got to
take. I think I'm with you.
We got to run. We'll see you back here next week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.